It's time for JT the Brick.
I'm rolling today. Vegas is the sports and entertainment capital of the world. No debate. Every day we have the ability to talk Raiders, and you can talk about whatever you want to talk about this time of year. There's never an off season in the Raider Nation. I've done this rodeo before. Do we all agree?
Here we go again.
Hey, girls.
JT the Brick.
We want to put guests and callers on the radio who can make an impact. We're going to talk sports. All different types of sports, because we do a sports talk show. We have the best fans in all sports calling the show for over a quarter century. We hope that remains the same whenever you want to pick up the phone. Enjoy everything we do, and please always feel welcome to call in and to tweet and to be a part of the show. It's Big Boy Radio. Are you with me? What do you got? You, the Raider Nation, have an opinion. Welcome back, everybody. It's the final hour here on a Friday that did not fly by quickly. This was a grind of a week in a good way. And again, I love doing what I'm doing, but, you know, not the most vibrant time of the year in June. End of June, unless there's a lot of drama, which we're happy there's not locally. And nationally, it was pretty quiet, other than what's happening here in Vegas this week. And I call this the Modelo Hour. My wife has this thing, the Golden Hour. Our dog, because it's so hot, comes out around 6:30 at night. It comes out to our backyard, and the sun is kind of setting. It's the Golden Hour. He puts his face in the sun. It's a little bit cooler, not much. And we call that the Golden Hour, as we're in the pool, Modelo Friday. And made me realize that I got to thank Modelo. I always do, as you know, bucket of Modelos. People stop me in airports. JT, would you like a Modelo? Yes, I would. And I'd like to buy you a Modelo if you come to the Torch or we're at a bar with the Raiders or anything. We're brought to you by Modelo, the number one beer in America. And I'm thrilled to say that. On Friday, if we got something good, I like to reposition it again because it's me. It's my work. It's what I've done. Last week, we had an unbelievable week at the end of the week. We had Reggie Jackson, Pete Rose, and Greg Townsend, who was fantastic. And that's living up at Raiders.com if you didn't hear the Greg Townsend interview. But I wanted to get to Sam Munson again from Pro Football Focus in a moment, because normally we do a national interview during the season every Monday, but he wanted to come on and talk Raiders, or agreed to come on and talk Raiders, and we did a deep dive on that. And if you missed it, and you probably did, you'll hear it again coming up here. And I think it was my best content this week because Sam's really good, and I didn't know what I was going to get from him. So that'll come up in a minute. Earlier today, the 33rd team, Rich Gannon's a part of that too. There's a big group of people there, former GMs and players. They got a pretty good site, the 33rd team. And I got an email because I subscribed to it, and it says ranking the NFL's 10 worst rosters entering 2024. Oh boy. So I saw the email, and I figured the Raiders would be there because the Raiders are not getting a lot of respect, as we often talk about on this show. So this is from 10 to 1, the worst rosters that are out there. And at number 10 was the Raiders. So I didn't have to read that far. It came right out at number 10. And this is according to the 33rd team. This list isn't a prediction of which teams will end the season with the worst 10 records, but rather a measurement of talent. We weighed the star power, depth, and level of impact each roster is getting from every position. Now, I dove into this in hour number one in the monologue, kind of set the table for this hour, as I wanted you to hear this again. And it says, the extremes of the Las Vegas Raiders will make them a fun team to watch in 2024, whether it's Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew under center. They'll have to strongly lean into the strengths of an offense with an unproven running back stable and lack of depth at receiver. Okay, I'm going to get back to that in a moment. The good news is Devontae Adams, Brock Bowers, and Michael Mayer are fully capable of providing big plays. It goes on, the 33rd team, to say, it's the consistency that is a concern for a young unit with no defined third receiver and a first-year starting running back after Josh Jacobs, who departed to Green Bay. The offensive line will benefit by adding second-round pick Jackson Powers Johnson, but it's still not a reliable unit. Playing in the AFC West meat grinder will expose the team's issues more than most divisions. The defense is in a similar boat. Really? Okay, I'll get back to that too. The 33rd team goes on to say the defensive line is more than formidable with Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins, headlining it. The big question is whether the passing defense will again rank in the top 12 of yards and touchdowns allowed, despite the individual talent failing to perform at a star level. That might change as Robert Spillane, Jack Jones, and Trevon Merrick continue to grow. If they don't, the Raiders might see some regression on defense. Oh, boy. Okay, let's do a couple of things here because it proves, before we get to Sam Monson, exactly what I talk about here when I defend the Raiders. And I could be right and I could be wrong. Okay, let's begin with what they said right out of the gate from the 33rd team with the roster when they talked about the receiving depth. Because they're going to mention Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew, because that's all the national media does is mention those two gentlemen. That's all they do. All they do is mention instability at quarterback, where the quarterback position is kind of stable. Aiden O'Connell was drafted. He looks to be the starter as of today. And Gardner Minshew is one of the best backups in football, and they paid him, and he could potentially start. So you look at it two ways. The Raiders don't have an elite quarterback. Agree. Do they have a problem at quarterback? I don't think it's a problem other than the fact that it's not elite. But what he said about the depth concerns me because, again, Josh Jacobs left to go to Green Bay. So they didn't even mention the starting running back here in this article. Okay, someone wrote the article. They're supposed to do a deep dive into this article, and they didn't mention this is Ian Valentino. If Ian Valentino did not mention what this team has at running back, which would be Zamir White out of Georgia. Just add that. It's a couple of words. The Raiders are relying on Zamir White out of Georgia. That would have been nice. They didn't put that in there. They just talked about Josh Jacobs leaving, which is okay. They also didn't mention a guy by the name of Jacoby Myers. The fact that they don't have depth at the receiver position, Davante Adams, Brock Bowers, and Michael Mayer, where the hell is Jacoby Myers? He's one of the best number two receivers in football. You can't bleep and leave him out. I mean, you can't. And then they got Trey Tucker, who's pretty good on the outside, but he's unproven. So leave Trey Tucker out, but at least put Jacoby Myers in. And they don't do that. So that's what jumped out at me. They don't believe that the Raiders are deep enough at wide receiver. I disagree and push back. The offensive line with Jackson Powers Johnson, nice that they mentioned him. But then they say the defense is in a similar boat. And they mentioned Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins headlining it. They had no mention of Malcolm Kuntz. Malcolm Kuntz performed at a high level last year. He's a starting defensive end on the majority of teams in the NFL. He and probably the Raiders too, of course, and the Raiders have Tyree Wilson. So this gentleman didn't think enough to mention Jacoby Myers, didn't think enough to mention, I think, a really good player in Malcolm Kuntz, didn't mention Tyree Wilson, the seventh pick from a year before, and says if they don't, the Raiders might see some regression on defense. This is seriously glasses half empty stuff, isn't it? So that came in. The Raiders came in with the 10th weakest roster today in the NFL. At number 9, New Orleans. The Raiders are playing New Orleans. 8, the Chargers. Okay, so I like that. The Chargers here, despite boasting talent of Bosa, Derwin James, and Keenan Allen. They talked about the good players that they have, but the lack of depth that they have and what they're doing. Then let's continue. At number 7, 7th worst roster, Tennessee. I agree. 6, Washington Commanders. Fine. Let's go number 5, Carolina. We play Carolina. Carolina, obviously, is probably the weakest team in football, but their roster's ranked 5th to the bottom. Arizona. Would have been great if we played Arizona this year. And here comes Denver, 3rd worst roster in football. Finally, I agree with that. At number 2, the New York Giants. They just lost Saquon Barkley and Darren Waller retired. And the worst roster in the NFL, according to the 33rd team, would be New England, which I would agree with that. I would have said New England, Denver, or, you know, New England and Denver, to me, I think, are the teams that with the worst rosters there in Carolina because they have to prove themselves. So there's my anti-Raider propaganda. I think I started off the week with it, and I'm ending the week with it here in the final hour of the show. Sam Monson, he was on earlier with me this week from Pro Football Focus. fantastic. He wanted to come on to talk about the Raiders, which was refreshing. So this was our conversation with one of, I believe, the best podcasters and rising stars in the NFL podcast world, Sam Munson. I'm always thrilled to talk to Sam Munson, kind enough to join us from PFF, one of their great insiders. I listen to the podcast, I watch their content, and they're always ranking or rating something. Sam, good to talk to you again. Let me jump in and start. We're feeling neglected out here in Raider Nation. We feel like everyone's against us here out in Raiderland because everyone's giving love to the Chargers when it comes to gaming odds and winning the AFC if it's not the Chiefs. What's the problem nationally with the Raiders? What do people like you and your peers think about the team, the offseason, where they stand now in June?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is the quarterback situation. It's a lot easier to talk yourself into a high upside, optimistic outlook for a team like the Chargers because they have Justin Herbert, and we know that he's capable of special play, and even if he hasn't necessarily hit it consistently throughout his NFL career, Herbert plus Jim Harbaugh, it's a storyline that writes itself, whereas the Raiders, you know, for the second year in a row, it sort of feels like they were the team without a quarterback when the music stopped. Mm-hmm. And you know, Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew, it's certainly an intriguing duo. Those guys are fascinating quarterbacks, each in their own right, but neither one of them feels like an obvious, mm-hmm. long-term, definite answer for the Raiders. But I think this team, outside of the quarterback, is actually moving in the right direction on both sides of the ball.
So you're okay with the roster in general. It's the quarterback, and that's really what I'm seeing here as we look at this, is that everybody is not really diving into anything deeper with the quarterbacks because they think, is it fair to say that the ceiling is low or it's limited and not one of the two? Can Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew in this system with Brock Bowers, Michael Mayer, Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, can one of them really excel and surprise people, or is it just limited?
It may be limited. Look, Gardner Minshew is not a bad quarterback. Right. He's in a couple of different spots now. He's surprised people and I think played at a level higher than people expected him to or that people thought he was capable of. So it's entirely possible that Minshew within this offense or within this team is capable of making them a pretty good side and maybe a playoff team. But it's definitely, you know, when you have Gardner as your quarterback, it does feel like there's a pretty hard ceiling placed on top of that. And then Aiden O'Connell, you know, he was a fascinating quarterback. Like him as a prospect, his highlight reel coming out of Purdue was as good as any quarterback in that draft class. It's just that the lowlight reel was equally as impressive in the opposite direction. And his rookie season kind of looked a bit like that. We had two or three games in there where he looked really, really good. But there were also two or three games in there that were pretty disastrous. Mm-hmm. And it's a question of what is he going to be long-term, or is he going to settle into this kind of Ryan Fitzpatrick role where he's a borderline starting caliber quarterback, but a guy that can catch fire for a while. And when you get the high end of his variance, you get really productive play, but eventually the wheels fall off and, you know, he gets benched or he gets moved on. And you know, it's sort of the story of Ryan Fitzpatrick's career.
Sam Munson is our guest. So with 12 personnel, with two tight ends who have a chance to be really good at Michael Mayer and especially Brock Bowers, and Luke Getsy being the offensive coordinator, which quarterback do you think could navigate that two tight end set better, Minshew or Aiden O'Connell?
I mean, I think Minshew is almost certainly a better quarterback than O'Connell right now. Mm-hmm. But O'Connell's the young guy. He's the guy that's easier to sell you yourself on upside. And, you know, we don't quite know exactly what he is yet. And maybe he can be better than I've just described. Maybe he can sort of permanently end up on the right side of that range of outcomes. And he's, in that case, you know, he becomes the better option. So I think it's tough. I say you let them battle it out. And if you can convince yourself that Aiden O'Connell has at least got parity in that quarterback competition, you give him the job, you give him the opportunity to fail, and you know that if you need to, you can turn to Minshew.
One of the big thing I wanted to ask about the Chargers, how could they be better without Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams? I get that Harbaugh's there, and he's going to sprinkle dust on the organization, and he's a good coach, and they're going to be tougher and more physical. But from a personnel perspective, other than the quarterback, I don't see them having an elite roster, and they won five games last year. What's the upside for the Chargers?
Yeah, the receiver room definitely looks like a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, they've added some players. Ladd McConkey was an important draft pick for them. They've added a couple of other guys as well. DJ Chark coming in is an important addition. But that's a weakness. The only sort of solace is they're probably going to be running a much more run-heavy offense, and they're going to lean on their receivers less than they would have in the last few years under any of the previous offenses that Justin Herbert has been in. So, you know, I agree with you. I think from a personnel standpoint, they have gotten worse. But Harbaugh and Greg Roman, you know, they know how to create an offense that doesn't necessarily need to lean on the passing game and can be efficient and can still function. So I think that's what people are looking for. But I kind of feel like it might be a year away. Mm-hmm. You know, this might be a rough opening season for them. And then next year is the year where we get to see the fruits of all the additions.
Sam Munson is our guest as we wrap it up. What do you see with the upside of Denver as we go through the AFC West here on a deep dive? Do you think Denver is closer to a rebuild or similar to the Chargers are getting better personnel and maybe they're another year or so out?
I think they're in the midst, if not just starting, a rebuild. You look at that roster, and I think they've got some major problems in several areas. And, you know, we looked at this team a while ago, a couple of years ago, and we thought they were an Aaron Rodgers away from being a Super Bowl team. And obviously they never ended up getting Rodgers. They got Russell Wilson instead, and that's just been a complete catastrophe for this roster. They shipped off Jerry Jeudy without ever really discovering if he could be a high-impact player because the quarterback situation was bad. Cortland Sutton has never really bounced back to being the player he looked like he was going to be before injury. Tim Patrick is coming back from an injury. It's just not a good receiving core. The offensive line had big investment last offseason and wasn't spectacular last year. Even if Russell Wilson wasn't helping matters, you know, the running back room, Javonte Williams needs to play at a higher level, or Andre Destemay coming in as a rookie and make an impact there. And then you've got the question mark at quarterback with presumably Bo Nix going to be given every chance to start. And then the defense is not in great shape either. So I feel like Denver has really just started a rebuild and is plugging probably a rookie quarterback in to try and look a lot better immediately.
Sam Munson, as we say goodbye here in a moment, Sam, is there any weakness in Kansas City? Not weakness, but maybe a step back to give everybody hope out here from Vegas to the AFC West that maybe Kansas City can't three-peat? Because I think the motivation to three-peat will be the biggest motivation they ever have to be considered the greatest team of all time in an era that had Tom Brady. The 72 Dolphins were back in the day. They're playing for everything legacy-wise. Do you think they get there, or could they slip up?
I mean, I think they certainly start off the season as favorites again. There's not many weaknesses on this roster. No. It's one of the better rosters that Patrick Mahomes has had to work with since he's been in the NFL. The one concern, I think, is offensive tackle, where you know they don't have left tackle. Donovan Smith isn't there anymore. They've got a rookie in Kingsley Suamataia coming in, or Wanya Morris, who's been there already. Neither one of those guys is a sure thing at left tackle. And then the big expenditure last year on Juwan Taylor at right tackle, he didn't play well last season. I think he got in his head with the early kind of overemphasis of penalizing him with those false starts and illegal formation calls. He never seemed to recover from that. So if those two tackles are both a problem, that it's still a solid interior. It's still a very strong interior, but that gives them, you know, a bookend pair of problems that haven't been there since at least that Tampa Bay Super Bowl where things unraveled so spectacularly on the offensive line.
Last one. Do you have a team that you think is overhyped and a team that you think is underhyped that deserve more credit?
I think for the underhyped team, I think the Atlanta Falcons are going to be a good team. Like that became a playoff team the second they signed Kirk Cousins. And we're kind of losing sight of that because of all the Michael Penix drama around the draft. But that's going to be a good offense, and they could make some noise in the NFC. Overhyped teams, maybe not overhyped, but I think the Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals, I'm not sure either of them got better this offseason. I think they're both going to maybe struggle who live with a team like Kansas City who does look like they're going to be in a strong position to three-peat.
Thank you, Sam. Good to talk to you. Always appreciate your insight. Thank you.
Anytime. Take it easy.
So I hope you enjoyed that. I thought Sam made a lot of good points, and He didn't seem to rip the Raiders so hard. I think everything he talked about is pretty accurate, and it comes back to the quarterback situation and who's going to be the starting quarterback of this team. If you want to get through before that, no big deal. It's our final hour of the week. You can hit me up, and please follow the YouTube page, which had another good week. JT the Brick YT is where you go find that. Subscriptions are up. Sorry I don't have a subscription model for you for trips and road trips and T-shirts. You never know. We get this thing over 10,000, which we're on the way to doing. Slowly but surely, we'll have a lot in there for you also. When we come back, we'll take a look at, and we'll thank some of our proud partners of the week here, as Bobby is back, and we're excited about that on a good week. And then next week, it'll be a short week for me, and then we begin July 8th with our countdown of the top 10 Raider games of all time. It's going to be a doozy here on the flagship of the Silver and Black. Brought to you by Remy Martin, Team Up for Excellence. Hoist a Remy Martin Cointreau margarita. You put the Cointreau in, your favorite tequila. I would recommend Tequila Commissario. Two proud partners of our show on a Friday. We continue on Raider Nation Radio. All right, welcome back this Friday here as we wrap up our week on the flagship. Raider Nation Radio, man, there's a lot happening today. There was a lot of noise yesterday. We had a presidential debate. A lot of people watched that, an enormous amount of people in sports. You know, when I signed off yesterday at 1 o'clock Pacific time, we signed off to get to the NBA draft. And as I told you, right before I left the building, the big storyline would be if LeBron James' son, Bronny, would get drafted. And most likely by the Lakers, and he did. I didn't think he was going to get drafted for most of this process. I obviously brought it up. We had guests on this week. John Ireland joined me earlier in the week, the voice of the Lakers. I did a podcast with my podcast partner, Tom Looney, on this topic. And, you know, we debated it, and there was a chance that if he was going to go anywhere, it would be the Lakers. I mean, 90% of the people thought that if he would get drafted, it would be with the Lakers. But I was really disappointed with the reaction initially, and especially on my timeline. I put out a video yesterday. I checked it today. People dropping slurs on my feed and calling personal names and this and that. It's really repulsive how this kid is being treated at the age of 19. Now, everybody's trying to figure out if he's going to fit in. Vincent Goodwill from Yahoo wrote a pretty good column on this. So it shall be said, show it is done. So it shall be done. The king and the prince united, just not in household, but an employer at the Lakers, as LeBron James Jr., known as Bronny, will pair with his father, and that's the first time this will ever happen. And as you know, it's an assumption that both of them are going to take the floor together, and they should. LeBron James does have a player option. They'd be the first father-son duo to share the court in NBA history. So this was planted by Rich Paul, who's the agent. And a lot of people are saying, and I don't know how much of it's true, there was a lot of fact-checking last night with that lunacy that we watched, and today it's all about fact-checking. Well, when it comes to Rich Paul, until Rich Paul admits that he was trying to block a lot of teams and threaten a lot of teams by saying reportedly Bronny would go to Australia rather than go to the team that selected him, except for the Lakers. So that's an underlying current that people are trying to figure out. And some have at least reported that about Rich Paul. What we can say about Rich Paul, he's one of the most powerful people in sports. He dates Adele. He's a bronze agent. He's got a lot of other powerful players in multiple sports. And if he picks up the phone and tells an owner or mostly a GM or a vice president of basketball operations, don't do this, it's the equivalent of Scott Boras, the baseball agent, doing the same thing. Matter of fact, he's probably the greatest of all time at it because he deals with more volumes of players than Rich Paul. So if a guy like a baseball agent, Scott Boras, is going to say, my client, whoever it is, and he's got the biggest clients in baseball, is not going to play for you unless you do blank, he's got the power to yield that. I think that Rich Paul was working closely with Jeannie Buss, Rob Pelinka, now J.J. Redick, and most importantly, his top client and best friend, LeBron James, to bring Bronny to Los Angeles. So why is there such a big deal about this? And the word that we keep using is nepotism. It's the nepotism of a guy that averaged 5 points a game in college, wasn't very good. He was not even an elite AAU player at the time. He was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. Man, the guy's been playing organized basketball since he's been 5 years old and playing at the highest level of AAU for his dad or the best teams in that world. I said I saw him play at 13 years old over here in Las Vegas, and everybody was talking about him because of LeBron. I don't know if he deserves to play or not, but he was a second-round pick, and he's only 19 years old. So as of now, we think of him as a rotational player. If he's in the right development system, which is clearly the reason why the Lakers wanted Danny Hurley. Danny Hurley would have been perfect to develop Bronny James. He would have been hard on him. He would have yelled at him. He would have benched him. He would have made him run laps. He would have done it all. I would assume that J.J. Redick is going to do the same thing. The last thing that J.J. Redick can put up with, the last thing that they can hold, they cannot do, is sit here and make sure that he gets special treatment. It won't work because the Lakers got to go out and get other players also, right? The drafted players, they got to fit them in. They're going to look at free agents. Summer League here in Vegas is right around the corner. And J.J. Redick's got to coach the young players and find the best chemistry and the best roster along with Rob Pelinka that can fit in. It's not going to be about Bronny at all. But the thing that got me the most upset about this is that this guy wanted to play really bad, and he had a cardiac arrest. And I thought that that would tone down a lot of people who are going after him and screaming nepotism, and he gets preferential treatment, and oh my God, if it wasn't for his dad, he wouldn't play. Yeah, it appears that there is nepotism, but as I said, nepotism happens all over. Adrian Wojnarowski made a great rant about it. It happens with ownership, bringing in their sons. Look at the Cowboys with Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones' daughter. They're all involved with the organization of the team. You see it in sports with coaches. You see it with players all the time. And you and I don't get a chance to see all the front offices and everybody there. I mentioned Antonio Pierce's son is on the staff. I haven't met the young man yet. I'm sure he's a good kid. His dad's the head coach. If he's able to come in and learn from the ranks of Joe Philbin and Marvin Lewis and Champ Kelly, and Tom Telesco is the GM, you can bring your son in and help him have an opportunity to get into a passion in life. And coach, I don't think that's a bad thing. But when LeBron's involved, he's polarizing. It feels different for everybody else. It didn't help that Bronny only worked out for two teams, the Lakers and the Suns. He declined invitations everywhere. So other than the NBA camp that he worked out in, the draft camp and some film, a lot of teams didn't have the opportunity. So this was manipulated, and I think we could all say this by Rich Paul, LeBron James. They wanted him to land with the Lakers. But how about giving some credit to Rich Paul and the Lakers for getting the guy they wanted? We're not saying he's the best player. It seems like maybe he's not a second-round pick. He would have been an undrafted person. So he gets taken late in the second round. It doesn't cost the Lakers much. It's more of a flyer-type deal, but man, the guy looks like he's got the ability to grow at 19 years old. Remember, this isn't a 21, 22. There were some players drafted who were 24 years old. He's 19 years old. You got a chance to just develop Bronny James and to see if he can play on the wing and get into a game with his dad. But if you really want to sit there and rip this kid who suffered cardiac arrest and his mom and dad could have lost a son, and then you're going to go to social media and go after him that way, I find it pathetic. Now, I don't know where the fit's going to be. I don't know what's going to happen with the 55 pick. It's not that big of a deal, but everybody is criticizing this move mostly. And a lot of Laker fans are criticizing it because a lot of Laker fans are human beings like you and I, and they hear about nepotism all the time. And the nepotism in sports doesn't bother me as much as it does in entertainment and acting. Let me give an example in acting. There's thousands of actors who are good and better than the next actor who gets a part. You would know that, right? If you're an actor and you go into a room to audition for a part, and let's say there's 200 people auditioning or 100, you might not be the best. You might not hit it out of the park that day. You might not have a reputation already being in a whole bunch of movies, and then all of a sudden a famous actor's kid comes in, and the casting agent and the producer know that actor, and they want to give the kid a shot. Well, that's fine, but it's not going to work unless the kid can act. It's the same exact thing in the NBA. If LeBron James' son, Bronny, can't come in and play at an NBA level, he's not going to be there. He's going to have a chance to hold on a little bit longer, with the Los Angeles Lakers organization because of his dad and the love that the organization has for Bronny. Remember, LeBron's been a Laker for a long time. And so his son's been around that organization at private events, practices, functions, holiday parties. They all know him. The kid's got tremendous character, and he seems like he's really working hard to get to that level. Now the question is, can LeBron get his fifth championship? Can he go on and win that title and get to five, one behind Jordan? And what will LeBron James do to either get in the way of the situation or get out of the way? I don't know. But I can tell you this much. I'm sick of hearing about nepotism. When I got into sports radio, for me, there was no nepotism. My dad's a conservative government accountant. All my dad said was, I'm there for you if you need any help. That was it. He couldn't make any phone calls to program directors and put in a good word for me at WFAN or KMBR. There was none of that happening, nor would it happen. LeBron James was able, clearly, to help his son genetically and with being a good dad, and this kid really not having anything wrong with him. No police blotter, no problems with it at all. Let's celebrate kids like Bronny James. And then if you want to get back to nepotism and other walks of life, you know, guys who are working in Silicon Valley because their dad, or I came from the stockbroker industry. A lot of stockbrokers give their business to their children, their adult kids when they retire, their book. Real estate all the time, right? You see people selling homes all the time. Well, they got into the business. Now their daughter's in the business. And they handed down some referrals. It's incredible that this kid got beat up as badly as he has in the last, I don't know, 24 hours as we're wrapping up the show here on Friday in real time here. A little bit less than 24 hours. And my sons are big-time Laker fans. You know I'm not. I'm a Knick fan. But I'm rooting for the kid. I'm rooting for the kid mostly because he had a serious ailment and a cardiac arrest, and he fought through it, and he might have never played basketball again. I hope the kid can play basketball going forward. I hope the kid has the ability to make it, and if he doesn't make it, maybe he'll do what Michael Jordan's son is doing, selling shoes for Michael Jordan. I threw that out on Twitter yesterday. It wasn't a great moment by me, but as everyone's ripping on Bronny James and nepotism and all this, how embarrassed was Michael Jordan that his son was dating Scottie Pippen's ex-wife, Lara Pippen? How big of an embarrassment was that for Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan's ex-wife, his son's mom, Michael Jordan's entire family, that his eldest son was dating Scottie Pippen's ex-wife, if you've ever seen her shenanigans? Pretty embarrassing, huh? I don't see a big thread on social media talking about that. That's far more embarrassing than LeBron James' son being a late second-round pick trying to make a team. Social media frames a lot of things. And LeBron had a lot of pressure. And LeBron came into the league at 17 out of high school, something we know Michael Jordan couldn't do. Also, Michael Jordan doesn't have a son in the NBA. Michael Jordan's still not playing at the age of LeBron James now. Michael Jordan could not play at the age of LeBron James now and dominate with the stats the way LeBron is doing. Michael Jordan got cut from his high school team. LeBron went to the NBA from high school. So it all comes back to, what is LeBron James doing for his son? I don't know. I can't answer that. I know what I do for my sons. I want to be a better dad every day. If I can help them along the way just a little bit, give them the right advice, tell them what my advice would be, and they know their businesses better than mine, unless they get into this business or something else. And if my sons wanted to get into this business, one out of the two, later on in life, and I was retired and wanted to come out of retirement to help them or co-host a podcast with them or take them on the road with me like I do to Raider games, I do that all day long. Being with your family is the most important thing. It should be in higher regard than your job. It so happens that LeBron James is arguably the greatest basketball player of all time, or really, really close. Yeah, on the Mount Rushmore. He's going to play for his son. This is a fascinating story. We are witnessing history again. As this evolves, are you going to be a rooter against it, or are you going to be for it? Just let that hear as we let this final hour wrap up. All right, before I come back, let that sink in for a second. I root against a lot of teams. You know me, I root against Kansas City. Travis Kelce's with the Swifty. You've heard me before. I root against a lot of other things. But I don't root against young people who are starting their careers and trying to dream and do great things. And I think that's what Bronny James is doing. 702-365-9200. Appreciate everybody this week. When we come back, we'll go through some of our proud partners, tell you what we got lined up for next week. Next week is a little bit of a short week for me. I got a little bit of a trip up to Canada, Vancouver for the first time. Going to see the Rolling Stones with my wife. That's our side hustle. That's what we do. We met at a Stone show on February 15th, 1998. And on July 5th, 2024, we'll be back in a stadium watching the Rolling Stones, which is our happy place. I want to thank our proud partners, as always, Modelo. Friday, my bucket of Modelo's on ice. Raise a glass or a can or a draft, however you get it. Modelo, the number one beer in America, as we continue on the flagship of the Silver and Black. This is Raider Nation Radio. All right, welcome back, everybody. JT, as we wrap up our week here, Friday. A lot of good things posted at Raiders.com. If you haven't been over there in a while, a lot of good content. Eddie Pascal's got, upon further review, there's a lot of our interviews that are up there. One other piece of content that I saw today is Raiders legend Howie Long made a case for Gardner Minshew when he went on his son's podcast, Green Light with Chris Long. Here's the quote from Howie. O'Connell is a guy that showed some flashes, and I think they're going to give him every opportunity to be the guy, but I think Minshew is a gamer, Howie said. He's not a guy that I think impresses you on Wednesday and Thursday, but for whatever reason, whether it's Jacksonville or when he stopped in Philly or with the Colts, I think his last two stops, both in Philly and the Colts, I think he gained a great deal from both of those stops personally. I think the scheme, the system, and the coaching, all that. And I think if he gets the opportunity, he might not relinquish it. Very interesting comments there as this quarterback, it's not a controversy, this quarterback battle is probably heating up. And what Howie said, which I want to pick out, I didn't hear it, I'm just reading this from what I saw today, he said, quote, I think the scheme system coaching gives him the opportunity that he might not relinquish it. The scheme could be better for Gardner Minshew than Aiden O'Connell, this 12 personnel. We've been talking about that for a while. It's a different scheme. It's a brand new system under Luke Getsy. Luke Getsy's going to give everybody an opportunity to play in this system here, and we'll see who makes better plays out of the pocket and gets the ball out quickly. It's one of the other things I said this week. Who gets the ball out cleaner in the preseason is going to be the starting quarterback. The other big story here this week, which Mike Florio seems to be the only one reporting on this, the NFL loses the Sunday Ticket trial, ordered to pay $4 billion by a federal jury. And they'll go on appeal with this, but it still brings me back to the John Gruden lawsuit. I think I've talked about it. I think I know more than anyone in NFL sports media on the John Gruden lawsuit because of a number of reasons. The individual whose emails were stolen, Bruce Allen, who hired me decades ago, and John Gruden, who I got hired the same day he did, the first year he came around here with the Raiders. And obviously, you know my friendship with Coach Gruden over the decades. And that deal is a bizarre deal that, again, John Gruden's on appeal. But this number for the NFL is massive. This is the column from earlier today that I read on Friday. It came out on Thursday. Ian Castleberry writes, the NFL's been ordered to pay $4.7 billion in residential class damages and $96 million in commercial class damages by a federal jury in a class action lawsuit filed against the league to subscribers of NFL Sunday Ticket. The verdict was first reported by journalist Megan Cuniff. Now, I'm a part of this lawsuit, I would think. I've always had Sunday Ticket. Always. So this is the lawsuit. I think I'm a part of this. The lawsuit argued that the NFL, its teams, and its networks partners, that would be DirecTV, CBS, ESPN, and Fox, violated antitrust rules by working together to limit competition and sell the out-of-market TV package at an inflated price. So look, ownership's involved with this. Remember, the league is the owners. The players are different, but this would be the league. The plaintiffs included more than 2.5 million residential subscribers and more than 48,000 restaurant, bars, and other commercial establishments that purchased the subscription to Sunday Ticket. 48,000 restaurants and bars. Good to see that number here. I've always wondered what that number was going to look like, and this seems to be pretty accurate because it's a federal lawsuit. The lawsuit was originally filed in 2015 on behalf of San Francisco's Mucky Duck Sports Bar. I know San Francisco well. I've never heard of Mucky Duck. Alleging that DirecTV, CBS, ESPN, and Fox violated antitrust law by suppressing competition in those exclusive agreements with the NFL. DirecTV had the NFL Sunday ticket package exclusively from 94 to 2022. And I think from 94, I don't know exactly when I had DirecTV. I mean, I started on the radio in 96. I know when I lived in L.A. and in the Bay Area, especially in the L.A. For 10 years, I always had DirecTV because I didn't like the local coverage. The plaintiffs sought $7 billion in damages in the lawsuit. Under federal antitrust laws, damages can triple. So that $4 billion of the verdict will increase to $10 billion, according to SportsRac. This is not going to go away. SportsRac, who you should follow, it's a really good site, SpotRac, tweeted out the NFL has been ordered to pay $96 million in commercial class damages and $4 billion in residential class damages per the guilty verdict in the Sunday Ticket antitrust. So here we go. Just like John Gruden's appealing the NFL, right? He's appealing what happened with that 2-1 vote in the Nevada State Supreme Court. The NFL intends to appeal the decision by Philip Gutierrez, the U.S. District Judge, arguing that the damages are excessive and unreasonable. Very interesting. Very interesting. I tie it back to Gruden. The NFL is saying that the damages are excessive and unreasonable. Okay. The league also issued a statement saying it's disappointed with the jury's verdict. So this is basically what Roger Goodell is going to be concentrating on. This is a big number. This is a number that's not going to go away. The NFL said, quote, "We'll certainly contest this decision as we believe the class action claims in this case are baseless and without merit." The NFL always says that when they lose. The NFL, team owners including Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft and Commissioner Roger Goodell argued in testimony that Sunday Ticket was a premium product, not concerned with drawing big subscriber numbers because the league did not want to adversely affect ratings for its TV partners. Quote, "The NFL never let prices drop again," said the plaintiff's attorneys, citing a 2012 drop in DirecTV prices that resulted in a 40% surge in subscribers. I 100% remember that because in 2012, when they dropped the prices, everybody looked at it again and said, yeah, I'll jump in and be a part of that. This is how an illegal antitrust scheme works, coming from the plaintiffs. Among the closing arguments was a 2017 memo issued by the NFL that stated the league was looking at the option of putting out-of-market games on cable if the decision was made to shutter Sunday Ticket. So there's a whole bunch of emails now. Remember the John Gruden emails. Additionally, 2021 email from ESPN proposed a lesser package with a price of $70 per season, but the NFL rejected that. According to the Boston Globe, the Sunday Ticket service is now available through YouTube, which I have, and it was priced at $349 last season. Man, these numbers are crazy. If the verdict is maintained, the NFL will then appeal the ruling, which is expected to tie up the case for months, if not years, and delay any payments that the plaintiffs might receive in addition to any proposed changes to Sunday Ticket. Just want to wrap up this week by saying, everybody, you're really important. You're the consumer. You consume this radio show, the podcast. I can't thank you enough for that. And I consume the NFL. I work in the NFL. I love the NFL. And I mostly side with the owners. If you listen to the show, I got a lot of friends who are players. But the ownership, usually I side with them because the owners have built this league, along with the commissioner, and has grown the league. But from time to time, there's some hiccups along the way. And this is a big one when it comes to this number. This is not jump change here, everybody. We are talking enormous dollars here that the NFL will have to hope that they can get a little bit of it back on appeal because they're not going to win this case. They just want the number to be a little bit smaller. I want to thank everybody who joined us this week from a partnership position here. The Black Hole, we had Mark Jones on. Fantastic job. Remember, you can be a lifetime member for about $60, a little over $50. You can be a lifetime member of the Black Hole. I'd go do that right now at theblackhole.com. Boyd Gaming and all the local work they do here in town. When you ever go to a Boyd Gaming property now, as you walk in, and it could be the Orleans, it could be any of the Boyd properties here on the Strip, and walk in the Gold Coast, you'll see all this new Raiders branding. They do a great job as a proud partner. We want to thank our friends at Modelo. Bucket of Modelo's on deck here in a few minutes. The DiCastroverde Law Group, Alex and Orlando DiCastroverde. The Brothers Win, brotherswin.com. The brothers have your back. If you get into an accident or injured, 702-222-9999. Our great friends at Remy Martin, Team Up for Excellence. We appreciate everything they do for us. Get yourself a Remy Quattro, and you'll enjoy that. And we can't forget Tequila Commissario, the Ferrari of tequilas. Thanks to Gavin Maloof and their whole team for what they do for us here. If you're looking for a new tequila, high-end, they have the highest of the high-end. And then they have a bunch of other tequilas that I think you'll like. We're putting that in La Casa Cigar Lounge, hopefully pretty soon there. So go check that out. Mike from La Casa Cigars, again, happy birthday to Mike and happy wedding anniversary. As Mike took off for Sedona to celebrate his great birthday weekend. Golden Entertainment, everything they do for us, from the Strat to the Laughlin Entertainment Center, with some great concerts outside. If you want to go out there, see a couple of big bands. We appreciate PTs. They fuel the monologue. M Resort, Spa and Casino, for everything they do. The official hotel of the Silver and Black. Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, One Love. Ice Tea the Rapper, the official Ice Tea of Ice Tea. And Resorts World, with everything we talked about earlier in the show. They have a lot of great things happening. We added Virgin Hotels back. We're thrilled there, thanks to Cliff and the whole staff there. There's a lot of changes that are about to happen at Virgin Hotels. There's been a lot of directions that they've gone in since they were the Hard Rock, which is where my DNA is, and now they're Virgin, where I go a lot. From one steakhouse to Cassie Beach, they're the kitchen, everything they have there, and our friends that work there at the Shag Room, they're back on our show for football season, and I wanted to thank them for that. Thanks to Bobby. Appreciate Bobby being back. Jess worked with us this week, along with Danny, and we got a good week as we kick off on Monday. I'm going to start teasing ahead. Monday, we're going to start looking at the top 10 Raider games of all time. That'll debut on July 8th. Everybody excited for that. Have a great weekend. There's a lot to do in town. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. We'll be back on Monday on Raider Nation Radio.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.